Welcome to The Hoop Commitment. I'm your host, Mike Nielsen. Join me every month to get inside the greatest minds in basketball nutrition, training, and leadership to elevate your game and improve the way you eat, train, and lead. Welcome to episode 122. Last month's episode with Dr. Andy Galpin was all about program design and how to create stronger athletes. And after a couple weeks off, our Gonzaga basketball teams are finally back in the weight room putting in work. But I'm quick to let our players know that you don't get stronger in the weight room. You get stronger with proper rest and nutrition. The weight room creates the stimulus for growth, but our muscles are literally made from the food that we eat. And so if you want to gain 5 pounds of muscle, your eating routine has to support it. And this might sound easy, but for our high schoolers that are now playing in tournaments, it's a huge challenge to get in enough quality calories and nutrients to support growth. And so I brought on registered dietitian Jessica Isaacs to talk about how to optimize the pregame meal. Jessica is a Los Angeles-based sports dietitian with an eclectic career working with elite-level athletes, creating engaging social media content, and is a highly sought-after speaker and mentor. She earned her Bachelor of Science in Nutrition and Dietetics from Purdue University and is a board-certified specialist in sports dietetics. In her career working as a sports dietitian, she has supported thousands of athletes from youth to professional level, serving as a sports dietitian at Kobe Bryant's Mamba Sports Academy, the basketball performance dietitian at UCLA, and spent 2 seasons as the lead sports dietitian for the LA Clippers. I picked her brain to find out what to eat the night before a big game, breakfast options when you have the 8 a.m. summer game, and how to think about pregame meals when you play twice in a day. For athletes going to summer camps or playing in travel tournaments, you won't want to miss this info. Here's Jessica Isaacs. Jessica, welcome to the Hoop Commitment Podcast. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm excited to pick your brain today. What you do is so important to our athletes. And so I'd love to start out and find out what got you into sports nutrition.
Oh my goodness. So I wasn't an athlete growing up. I always aspired to be, but I struggled with nutrition. I struggled with body image issues. I was kind of caught up in that world of like, you need to have a six pack and be shredded in order to be like a healthy person. And so I started off down that track and just kind of found myself plagued with a lot of misinformation, a lot of trying things that really weren't healthful or helpful for me. And just kind of through my own personal journey, became fascinated with just seeing the difference that proper nutrition made for myself. Once I started to get into more like bodybuilding and performance, I could see just kind of the growth and the progress that I was making. I just became really excited about, you know, how do I take what I'm learning and I've done in my N of one experiment on myself, and how do I take that to the high performers, the top performers, elite athletes? And so really became fascinated with trying to take nutrition and proper nutrition to high performance. And then also just being a voice of this, you know, all this misinformation that's out there with fueling, with nutrition, and kind of understand nutrition for them versus nutrition for people that maybe are in the more aesthetics or weight loss realm.
And you've got to work with some high level basketball players. I've seen that you've worked with UCLA at one point and the LA Clippers. Tell me about your experience working in the college setting versus with the NBA players.
Yeah, there's some similarities and then just so many differences, right? Because a lot of the college hoopers, when I started at UCLA, I was there just for one season with UCLA. I was their men's and women's basketball performance dietitian. And at the time, there was only one other program, I think, in the whole US that had a dedicated basketball dietitian. Like, we saw dietitians in football, you have a dietitian maybe overseeing the whole program, but rarely was there like a basketball specific dietitian. So that was really cool because with small team numbers, I'm able to do a whole lot of things. But really, I saw education was lacking, right? A lot of these hoopers had never got any kind of nutrition education up until this point. And so it became like a blank tablet for me to coach them up on all things nutrition. provide them great resources and all that sorts of thing. When you get to the pro level, I'm still seeing some like 20-year-olds, you know, or early 20s, but also guys in their 30s that have families, that have kids. And so other things that we're taking into consideration. Obviously, resources are much different as well. We got a lot more financially on the pro end. So I'm providing more services, still doing education, but I might be putting setting them up with a private chef as opposed to helping them, you know, navigate a grocery store. Or I might be providing the supplements directly for them, whereas in college, I couldn't, my hands were tied on providing some supplements, so it's more education. So there's just a lot more that I could do for the pro guys, but I did feel like on the collegiate end, there was a lot more education that I could provide and a lot more impact at that level.
Well, today I really want to dive deep into pregame meals, but before we do that, I'd love to start out with just a basic understanding of sports nutrition. When you talk to a high school basketball player, what are some of the big rocks that they need to consider?
Yeah, I think first, I'm surprised all the time to see how many people don't really understand the difference between a fat, a carb, and a protein. So understanding just macronutrients and being able to say like, okay, if it's chicken, fish, beef, it's a protein. If it's pasta, rice, bread, it's a carb, right? And being able to distinguish between those. But then we also have, when it comes to carbs specifically, carbs are so important for a basketball athlete. It should be like 60, 65% of their total calories in a day. But there's a lot of, again, on the internet and everywhere else, a lot of misinformation around carb intake and sugar and that sort of thing. So like a basketball athlete, we need a lot of carbs and we need them at the right time, especially pre, during, and post, anytime that we're really active. So those are the big things. And then, you know, depending on where athletes are from, how they grow up, socioeconomic status, there's so many things that go into like what an athlete's diet was like growing up. For me, I'm trying to work with an athlete very much individually to understand what's your background, what's your knowledge. You know, what did you normally have before games? What did you have at practices? What did you eat for dinner? What are those norms like for you growing up? And so a lot of times it's just really meeting athletes where they're at and maybe just seeing, you know, if they are someone that eats a lot of fast food, maybe there are small little incremental changes that we can do to improve their diet.
What are some of the biggest myths out there? You mentioned the carbohydrate myth. Are there any other myths or big mistakes that you see high school players making when they want to be their best?
I see a lot of fad diets for sure. The ketogenic diet, I don't think has been as popular with basketball athletes as with other athletes. It's just not a good choice for an athlete in general. I see intermittent fasting a lot. I see a lot because a lot of strength coaches like intermittent fasting. So a lot of times they encourage, unfortunately, their athletes to intermittent fast. And that's not really ideal because when you are, especially if you're a growing athlete or you're still trying to grow, whether that is in height or in musculature, we need a lot of calories and we need to be eating like throughout the day. And so when you have a busy student athlete that maybe has classes and practices and other things that commitments, if we're trying to do something like intermittent fasting and cutting down on the periods in which we are inputting calories, we're probably going to be behind and probably not getting in enough for the day. So just like eating regularly throughout the day and at regular intervals is something that a lot of athletes aren't doing. Again, the sugar one, there's a lot of misinformation around sugar and added sugars. And, you know, there are a lot of foods out there that are like ultra processed and have a lot of things that we don't necessarily need. But when we are going into training, and we'll talk about this more, we are actually looking for sugar to be our source of fuel before, during, and after our physical activity.
Yeah, it seems like that's the big gap, is that you have parents that are well-meaning, that are going to do the research on what's really good for a 40, 50-year-old to be able to stay healthy and look good. And then they're taking that advice and they're applying it to their teenage son or daughter that is burning a ton of calories, that is growing, that's lifting weights four times a week. And so everything you're saying is really ringing true to me, not just for my teenage kids that I have, but my Gonzaga athletes here. The biggest mistake I see them make is they're simply just not eating enough to really optimally fuel recovery and performance. So I had a great mental performance coach that said a pregame routine actually starts the night before with a good meal and good sleep. And so I thought we'd start this conversation, which is, how do you feel yourself well the night before a game?
So sometimes it's easy to place foods into categories of like, if you're like driving a race car, right? If we're driving like a fancy sports car, we want to put the best gas in it if we want it to perform at its best, or petrol, depending on where you are in the world. But we want to put in what's the ultra premium fuel, right? And then we go to the gas tank, though, we probably have like three options. We have unleaded, we have what's the middle one, premium, and then super or something like that, right? And so if we think of food in these categories, our unleaded fuel or our cheapest fuel is going to be things that are like the ultra high processed things, maybe like your bacon, hot dogs, things that are breaded and fried or greasy or have like creamy sauces. Those are going to be things that we're going to consider unleaded. They provide us fuel, but they might slow us down a little bit because they're higher in fat or they're higher in saturated fats, things that may promote some inflammation in our bodies. Then on the other end of things, we have like our fruits and vegetables and things that we are single ingredient that we have to cook. That's going to be on the other end of the spectrum. That's probably where we want to lean, somewhere in the middle to that higher end of fuel right before our game day and on game day. Because when we want to perform at our best, we want to put the best stuff in us. And so depending on when our game is, if we're having a game earlier in the morning or even early afternoon, I'd probably say that night meal the night before, we want it to be high carbohydrate. Because overnight, our body is going to deplete some of that stored carbohydrate. It's called glycogen. We store it in our muscle and our liver. And overnight, when we're fasting, we lose some of that because our body's actually working and repairing things. So we want to top that off at night as much as possible. And then we'll lead into the next day where we'll top it back off. But I'd like to see, you know, some sort of vegetable on that plate the night before. I want to see carbohydrates on that plate the night before. A good protein source, but again, probably avoiding things that are higher in saturated fats, things that are, again, fried, or, you know, even like a Alfredo is a huge one. Basketball athletes love an Alfredo sauce, but it is something that is higher in saturated fats. So I'm always big on let's have that after, perhaps, but let's not have that before going into competition.
When you talk about carbohydrates, is there a significant difference between a processed dense carbohydrate like a bread or a pasta versus a rice or potato?
There's different ways to think of that, right? Because if we get something that's like, let's say in a package or pre-made or whatever, it might be less nutrient rich, but it's still going to have carbohydrates. So we have to look at it. Are we trying to get nutrients out of this, or are we just trying to get carbs and fuel out of this? Because I'm going to make very different decisions based on that, right? A Rice Krispie treat is going to provide me carbs and sugar, and I can actually have that before practice, before a game, as a source of fuel. But that's probably not going to be the thing that I want to put on my plate for dinner when I'm probably trying to make up some other nutrients. So something that's like a whole grain, for instance, is going to have added fiber, added protein, more vitamins than something that is, again, like a higher ultra processed kind of an item. Then on the other hand, something like a cereal that is a carbohydrate has things added to it that are vitamins and minerals added to it. So again, like it's all on a spectrum. And so there are certain things that are maybe recommended certain times and not other times, but I am big on like all foods can truly fit into an athlete's diet. We just need to look at timing and purpose and function.
How strict were you with your collegiate athletes the year that you worked with the men's and women's team at UCLA? Were you a stickler for whole foods and for being on that side of the spectrum that's more nutrient dense? Or were you a little bit more understanding of the demands of travel and just people's personal preferences? How did you kind of balance the two?
Listen, I have a 17-year-old and she's not an athlete, but I will tell you, I pick up a lot on the habits and mindset of a teenager, which is very close to a college age person, right? It doesn't matter how quote unquote clean or healthful food is if the athlete won't eat it. Right? It's not going to do them any good if they're not going to eat it. So if I'm providing quinoa and broccoli and mahi-mahi, you know, which actually sounds really good to me, then and sounds good to probably a lot of people, that might, if that's not appetizing to my athletes, then it does me no good to be serving that because it's not actually going into their body. So it's striking a balance between what they actually will eat and want to eat, and then coaching them up on, hey, this is beneficial too. So if I'm setting up, I was in charge of catering. So if I'm setting up a meal for players, I'm going to think of, okay, what's the thing that most of my players may eat? It may be not what I want to put out there, but it's a thing that I know my players are going to eat because I need to, what, like we mentioned, a lot of them aren't eating enough. I need to get the calories in them. But I'll also have things on there that are probably things that they wouldn't normally put on their plate. And I'm going to stand around and kind of recommend that they put that on their plate and recommend that they try it. But I really need to meet them where they're at first and not just try to put, you know, Jessica, a dietitian program into place. You really have to, it's got to be a partnership. It's got to be a collaboration.
That's a cool way of looking at it. So you will supply the foods that you know are carbohydrates, protein, fat. They're going to give you those macronutrients. They might not be your first choice, but you know the athletes are going to like them and eat them. And then you also have your first choices there and encourage them, hey, try it out. Is that something where you find that it just takes a few times for them to be able to sense the texture or the taste before they actually start liking it?
It's different for everybody. I mean, some of them try it and it's something they just never have tried before. It was never there for them growing up, never heard of it or whatever. And so now that they've tried it, they're like, oh, wow, I actually like this, right? Or it's something that now that I know that the benefits of it, it's tolerable enough, palatable enough that I can take it in. Whereas there's other players, like I had a player who would keep like one of those giant jugs of, what was it, Sweet Ray's barbecue sauce. And he lathered everything in like heaps and heaps of barbecue sauce. If that player had some broccoli on his plate every now and then, I'm happy. I'm happy because he was someone who was kind of more of a stick in the mud when it came to making changes. And there's just certain people that are like that. You're going to have athletes that are very picky and aren't willing to make a lot of changes. And that's where someone like me coming in and trying to overhaul everything and change everything and have them do something completely different is probably not going to work out. In order to get buy-in with that athlete, I've got to take baby steps sometimes with certain athletes.
So if it's your son or daughter that is a high school athlete that really wants to play college or professional basketball, and they are a fried food, cream sauce, only processed food, the healthiest thing they're going to get is going to be a cereal that has some nutrients added in, some fortified vitamins. Are you forcing them to try vegetables, or are you just simply providing it and hoping that they give it a shot? How forceful are you with this? Because I have parents come to me all the time that says, I cook healthy meals. My son or my daughter, they refuse to eat it. What would be your advice to them?
Man, gosh, forceful, I feel like for a teenager or young person just never works out really well, right? Because they just love rebellion and having autonomy. And so if it was my own child, I would probably try to barter or make a deal of some sort of like, hey, look, that meal that you want, we're going to have that after the game. Like, I promise you, we're going to have that after the game. Here are maybe options. Here are maybe better options. And then maybe let them pick where they're still having choice, but maybe I'm limiting the options where that fried option isn't there. They can have it. They know it's in sight. And so there's not necessarily restriction from it, but knowing what I know, and that I want them to perform at their best and I want to support their recovery. I don't want them to get injured. I might recommend these better for you options that may include things, will hopefully include things that they like, might not just be what they prefer, but that's probably how I'd go about it.
That's a cool strategy. I like that. Well, let's get into the nuts and bolts. I think a typical high school season, we have the varsity teams playing somewhere around 7 o'clock at night. Yeah. Let's talk about what time should they have their pregame meal? What kind of food should be included? And then you already touched on a little bit, but what things should they avoid or stay away from?
So 7 p.m. game, generally for a full meal, a full mixed nutrient meal that has carbs, protein, fat, I'm looking at that 3 to 4 hours before a game, ideally. It's not always, in the college setting, sometimes it was only like 2, 2.5 hours, but ideally it's 3 to 4 hours out for a full meal because it takes time to digest. Our body digests nutrients at different rates. So when we take in carbohydrates, our body has an enzyme in our saliva that starts to break down carbohydrates. So we get those into our system pretty much right away. Protein digests a little bit slower, and then fats and fiber digest pretty slow. And so if a meal has some fats in it, which ideally it does, if it has some fiber in it from vegetables or some from whole grains, it's going to take a little bit longer to digest. And once we're into activity, our body is supplying blood flow out to our working muscles. It's not going to want to do a lot of digestive work. And that's where it can spell a recipe for disaster of it coming up one in or out the other, or just feeling really unsettled if we've eaten too close to activity. So 3 to 4 hours out, I like to see at least half of the plate being a carbohydrate. So pasta, rice, potatoes, bread, cereal, you know, some combination of those, half the plate. And then I like to see at least a hand-sized portion of a protein. So whether that is like a chicken, a fish, or a lean beef, something like that. And then ideally some like fruits or vegetables. I'm less of a stickler on the veggies. I think pregame, especially if I have like athletes that have any kind of digestive GI issues, like I'm not going to have them cramming in a bunch of broccoli and salad pregame. I might just say like, all right, because in that category, I want to get vitamins and minerals. I might say, let's put some fruit in that space instead. So half the plate carbs, a quarter of the plate protein, a quarter of the plate fruits and or vegetables. That's 3 to 4 hours out. Then about an hour to 2 hours out, if we're hungry again, we can have a little carb and protein combo there. That can be something like a piece of fruit, a protein bar, something like that. So we want to avoid fat and fiber after we've hit that 3 to 4 hour mark. Once we're within that, we want to keep it just carbs essentially, and maybe a little bit of protein. Then when we're in the 1 hour, 30 minutes to 1 hour before the game, that's when it's just carbs. I don't want to see any protein. I don't want to see any fat. I don't want to see any fiber. I just want to see strictly carbs, sugar, that sort of thing. That could be like, again, a piece of fruit, dried fruit, pretzels, sports drink, chews of some sort, fruit chews. Lots of different options work there. And that's kind of generally how I would lay out the timeline is meal, maybe light snack, and then carb-rich fuel right before the game.
Can you give some actual specific examples? What are maybe two or three meals that you had the athletes eat? Yeah. And so I'd love to know, like, hey, we had this protein, this carbohydrate. I love how you portioned out the amount so people could look at a plate and see what it is.
Yeah, pretty much had the same. We're creatures of habit. And that's kind of a thing I recommend too, is don't try anything new on game day. You know, it should be, it, like you said, a routine at that point. You can switch up your pregame meal, but you shouldn't be introducing anything that you haven't had before a practice or something like that. So generally I have out like a pasta, usually like spaghetti noodles or something like that with like a red sauce. Sometimes we'd have the Alfredo sauce there as well, but I would always like caution the athletes, let's not go heavy on the Alfredo sauce. Let's use the red sauce. I'd have chicken. I would have a salmon, and then I would have like a beef there. Generally like a beef skewer, like a lean beef option, and then fruits and vegetables. So, and then PB&Js galore, and all sorts of like carb kind of snacks as well would be out there. If it was earlier in the morning, more of like a breakfast brunch, then I'm going to have things like pancakes, waffles, fruit. I would probably do turkey bacon as opposed to regular bacon, have some eggs there, that sort of thing. And then, yeah, like I said, lots of fruit for a morning game.
So you'd actually have a buffet before the meals where you say, if you like fish, eat the fish. If you like chicken, eat the chicken. But you already have the portion size. It's going to be a palm-sized portion of one of those proteins. And then the athletes can really take what they not only is good for them, but what they like.
Right, exactly.
What about those 8 a.m. games? I just got back from Salt Lake City this weekend with my son, and he had a 9 o'clock game. And of course, now for a basketball player, for a high schooler, that's pretty early. You have to get to the gym. We try and get there an hour beforehand. You back it up, the travel to the gym. So is it important that they have a pregame meal if they have an 8 a.m. game? And if it is important, what types of things and how far out should they be eating?
Yeah, that one's tricky because like realistically, our athlete's not going to wake up 4 hours ahead of time if they don't need to and start eating right away. And they probably, if they aren't used to it, don't even have a huge appetite at that time. That's when I would encourage, let's have that big meal the night before, that high carb meal the night before. And maybe we even have like a bedtime snack as well, like a carb-rich snack before bed. Again, so that we're keeping our body and our carbohydrate stores, our glycogen, as full as possible going into the night. And then when I wake up, it might depend on the athlete and how much they can tolerate food at that time. Some athletes aren't really going to be hungry, or they may be fearful that they're not going to be able to digest that food in time. So I might be looking at like something like a smoothie, some sort of like liquid calories that take up less space in the stomach. They're usually easier to tolerate and we can get the same thing in. So I might look at something like that or something, just something light. So maybe they have like a Greek yogurt and a fruit, you know, or a bowl of cereal or something like that, a PB&J. Again, like maybe 1 to 2 hours before. So before you've hit the gym, leaving the hotel for perhaps, and then another carb, maybe they're sipping on like a Gatorade, Powerade, something like that leading up to the game. And so that way we're not putting a ton of food into our body, but we're prioritizing the carbohydrates and making sure that we have adequate fuel. And then post game is when I would have, you know, a full meal to make up for it.
Is it important to have protein for that breakfast? You know, if you're an hour out, if you have the 8 a.m. tip off, and so you have a little something at 7, would you prefer it just to be carbohydrates, or do you think there's some value in having protein an hour out?
Interesting thing about protein is we've had some new research come out not too long ago saying that we could like digest as much as 100 grams of protein in one sitting. And so it's thrown a lot into the whole idea that we need to have protein consistently throughout the day in order to properly repair our body. The thing about protein is we can store carbs and like as glycogen, we can store fat, obviously. We don't store protein, or the way that we store protein is muscles. And so if we aren't getting enough protein in each day, our body could potentially break down in order to supply it with what it needs. But all that to say, protein's not a huge need right there beforehand, as long as we're meeting it at some point in the day. So if you have trouble digesting protein in that 1 hour to 2 hour span before you're active, then skip it and we can add it somewhere else. I just want to make sure that we're getting it somewhere else. So it can be very flexible depending on the individual athlete and their schedule for the day. I generally recommend athletes to have protein at regular intervals, just because if they don't, they tend to get behind and they're not going to make up for it, right? But carbs are really going to be that thing that we need before a game and during a game. And so if we have to look at one or the other, then I'm leaning towards carbs for sure.
And it sounds like you're really flexible about the quality of those carbohydrates for breakfast specifically, because if you have a 9 a.m. tip off and you eat at 8, does it really matter if it's a pancake or cereal or a smoothie, as long as you're getting something and knowing that after the game, you can go and get some more of those whole foods or make a more well-balanced meal?
Correct. Because at that point, we're not really focused on nutrients and we're focused on fuel. And so we get fuel from carbs. Our body really doesn't care where those carbs come from when it comes to physical activity. It doesn't care if it's from eating straight sugar or honey or eating fruit or eating something more complex. And if it is more complex and has something like fiber, again, we don't really want that. So simple sugar is the name of the game around activity.
Now, during these tournaments, it's really typical to have 2 games, possibly even 3 in a day. Mm-hmm. And so now not only do we have the pregame protocols that you talked about, but they might change because you could have an 8 a.m. game and an 11 a.m. game. Mm-hmm. What's your thought process for when you have 2 games stacked in a day?
Kind of the same thing. We'll fuel the same way for the first game. And then we'll look at how much time do we have in between the next game. Hopefully, we have some kind of an idea if we have 30 minutes or whether we have 3 hours. If we have more like 3 hours, I might be doing something like a turkey sandwich, you know, something with some protein in it, something that a little bit more filling. But if I have less than 2 hours, again, I want to primarily focus on just having carbohydrates. We'll try to make up for those calories and on the back end of the day, and probably depends on how hungry your athlete is too. But I would probably keep it simple, something easy to digest in between. Again, focusing on primarily carbs. This might be like a PB&J, some fruit, a sports drink, you know, again, just really beefing up on those carbohydrates, and we'll make up for everything else later in the day.
You know, we've heard a lot about that post-workout window where your body's a little more insulin sensitive. How important is it to eat something immediately after the game if you have another game in a few hours?
Yeah, I mean, that's really important, right? We want to do rapid refueling, essentially, when we have those games so close together. And that's where the carbohydrates are really important. Because to your point, it's two purposes, right? It's not only fueling us for the next game, but it's replacing the fuel that we use from that last game, right? So in that recovery period, generally within like 45 minutes to an hour after, closer is fine, but that I would probably try to get this in within an hour, eating some sort of carbohydrates. The general recommendation for like a basketball athlete is a 3-to-1 ratio of carbohydrates to protein. So if I'm looking for 15 to 20 grams of protein to recover with afterwards, then I would be looking at 45 to 60 grams of carbohydrates. And that would be like 2 bananas, a few slices of bread. Again, it could be done in lots of different ways, but I would say that to your point, consuming carbohydrates right after would be really important to put gas back in our tank and then prime us to be able to perform it for the next game.
Does chocolate milk live up to the hype?
It does, actually. Chocolate milk is a great ratio of protein to carbohydrates. Like I just said, the 3-to-1. Chocolate milk does that. It also has liquid in it. So we get some rehydration in it. Dairy products also have a great electrolyte profiles. So they're great at rehydrating. So we get it all kind of all done there with chocolate milk. It's not the best thing in the world, but the reason why it's so touted is because it's cheap, it's effective, it gets the job done, and a lot of athletes generally like it and will do it. So again, you know, it only matters if the athlete's going to intake it. And so chocolate milk checks the box again and again.
What about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches? I read an article that talked about some NBA teams having peanut butter and jelly sandwich buffets where they'd have multiple kinds of bread, different kinds of jellies and jams and peanut butters for the athletes to make their own specific concoction. Tell me about PB&Js, why they're so good, and why does the NBA love them so much?
That sounds like heaven to me, honestly, to be honest. Actually, so when I was with the Clippers, whenever we would go to different facilities, different arenas, we had an internal text message with a group of us, like strength coaches, athletic trainers, where we would rate the different venues, PB&Js. And Orlando has the best PB&J. Utah Jazz also makes a pretty good PB&J. I think it's just, you know, it's a simple food, right? It's like one of those things that, you know, we all know, we all recognize. If for a basketball athlete that's used to routine, it's going to be at every venue. You're going to know that you're going to have PB&Js there. And so it might just be because they're used to it, because it's easy, because it's palatable, but basketball players really love a PB&J. We're not going to get a ton of protein from a PB&J. And I have a lot of thoughts around how they should be properly constructed. But I will save that feedback, but they're carb rich, they're cheap, they're easy. They travel well. And so, yeah, they're a big feature in the NBA for sure.
Well, now don't hold back. If you have the proper way to be constructed, we need to hear, because I have a best friend from back home, and we used to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day at lunch. And I looked over one day and he was taking the peanut butter and putting it on. It was kind of haphazardly put on. Then he put the jelly on top of the peanut butter. And I thought, man, who does it this way? And he's convinced that that's the best way to make a PB&J. So I'd love to hear from the expert.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we want to make sure that the peanut butter is reaching all corners, the full perimeter of the bread, right? You know, even if you're not a crust person, I want the peanut butter. I want to see it on all of the edges. And then I think generally like a 2 tablespoons of peanut butter is a good amount, you know, pretty thick peanut butter, and probably 1 tablespoon of your jelly. I did some research. Strawberry jelly is much more popular than grape jelly. I'm personally a grape jelly person, but I would put that on the other slice of bread. Again, making sure that we reach all edges, and then we put it together and it's a beautiful creation, sliced down the middle or diagonal, whatever you prefer.
I tried this the other day and it was absolute heaven. First off, I agree with everything you're saying. Peanut butter to the absolute edges, the jelly to the absolute edges. But then I took sliced strawberries and I put it on there. And so then it was like the extra sweet and it had that texture to it. I mean, it was really like dessert.
Yeah. Throw some heat on it too. If you ever like grill either side of it, it's a different experience.
Always another level, isn't there?
There really is. There's levels to it.
So if a player is eating well throughout the day, let's say they have an evening game, they have a good breakfast, lunch, snack, pregame meal, is there any need for them to sip on carbohydrates throughout the game in the form of Gatorade or have a halftime snack for a high school or college basketball player?
Yeah, I would look at how many minutes is the athlete playing? You know, are they someone who's going to be playing a lot of minutes or not? And that would probably go into consideration a little bit too. If we're active for more than like 45 minutes at a moderate to hard intensity level, that's when we want to see some carbs probably added in. Again, with something like a Gatorade, a Powerade, we've got a few things in there. And there's a lot of misinformation, again, for the regular general consumer around these sports drinks, but they're formulated for athletes. They have carbohydrates in them because carbohydrates help with hydration. And they have a good balance of electrolytes. Some athletes are going to need even more electrolytes than a Gatorade or Powerade or something like that is going to provide. But it is a great source of, again, getting some carbohydrates and getting hydration in at the same time. And so I'm a fan of it. I like to see it, especially if I know an athlete maybe it didn't get enough carbohydrates. If you, to your point, if they ate well throughout the day, you know, maybe they eat something at halftime and that's sufficient. But there's really I mean, for me, if I'm trying to perform at my best and I know that I need fuel to do that, and I know that once my fuel starts to wear out, I'm not going to perform as well, I'm going to keep fueling throughout, right? And so if I get a timeout, if I'm sitting on the bench, you know, and at halftime, I'm probably going to be putting something in my body to help me to continue to perform at my best. Sometimes with athletes, if we're chugging something like that, a sugary drink, we get the sloshy stomach. And so I would say, like, swish it around your mouth a little bit. Remember, we talked about like the enzyme in our saliva that starts to break down carbohydrates and lets our stomach know we got something coming in. So I would swish it around a little bit, swish it down. Like a couple gulps of that is going to be like 4 ounces of fluids. And so I would ideally like to see that like every 15 to 20 minutes, if possible.
What percentage of your college and pro basketball players were having a snack at halftime? I mean, is this like a small percentage or the average players doing this?
Well, I will say with my women's team at UCLA, it was a rule we implemented. So pretty much 97% of them would have something, whether that was, you know, fruit chews. They could be as simple as fruit snacks or some like Honey Stinger and different brands that make kind of athlete geared snacks, but the fruit chews work all the same, whether they're Welch's or Mott's or whatever, something like that, or a sports drink they would have, or PB&Js, or a salty snack like some pretzels. The guys' compliance ranged. Probably at the NBA level, I would say maybe half of them on my team were doing something. And it depends too, because if they were having a bad game, they were less likely to eat something at halftime, surprisingly. If they were having a good game and coming into the locker room in good spirits, then they're more likely to eat something, which I'd also almost do the opposite, to be honest. If I'm having a bad game, I'm like, what can I do during halftime to make sure that I'm coming out stronger? But yeah, probably half of them. Unless you have a reason why, like you're throwing up, you know, and then even then, like, let's troubleshoot that. I would say that if you are someone who is a starter, you're going to be playing most of the game, you should be having a snack at halftime, because chances are, especially if you're playing most of the game, you probably didn't come and drink every time you came to the bench. You probably didn't come and take a drink every time you came to the huddle, right? So I would use halftime as a period to refuel. Some coaches don't really get down with it though. I know some coaches don't allow like food and stuff like that in the locker room at halftime or don't want their athletes eating. And if your coach is like that, then that's when I would say like have a sports drink with you on the bench, ideally, so that you have those carbs you can get access to.
What are some good hydration guidelines, not just for while playing sport, but just throughout the entire day? I see athletes that really want to step up their nutrition and they'll go get a gallon of water. And sometimes that seems a little excessive. So can you talk about how much water they should typically be drinking throughout the day, and then specifically once they hit the court?
Yeah. So half of your body weight in ounces of fluid is like our starting point. So your weight in pounds divided by 2, that equivalent in ounces of fluid. So if you're 180 pounds, that's 90 ounces of fluid that we're starting with. And that's not taking into consideration any kind of activity. And we're going to have this throughout the day. Plain water, to your point, if we're just drinking like a gallon of plain water to the face, like we're probably going to be peeing like a crazy person. And we need to talk probably about electrolytes and having some sodium with that as well, not gulping and drinking things too fast. But then once we head into activity, about an hour to 2 hours out, I want to make sure that I'm having another like probably 12 to 24 ounces of fluids. That could come from that 90 ounces. That doesn't have to be added on. And then again, every 15 to 20 minutes, I would be taking a couple gulps of fluids. That's going to be another like probably 4 to 6 ounces. And then the big one is rehydrating after physical activity. And this is going to be variable by athlete and even by like training environment, training time, you know. So you'll know if you're like probably a heavy sweater. And if you're an athlete that gets like a lot of like the white discoloration on your hat or your uniform or something like that, or you get the salty crystals, you're probably a more salty sweater. But one thing you can do is get on the scale before your practice. Ideally in like as little clothing as possible, because our clothes afterwards are going to hold on to fluids way before and way after, and then see how much weight we've lost. It's not going to be fat pounds. It's going to be fluid pounds that we've lost. So if we started off at 180 and then we finished up at 176, I've lost 4 pounds of fluid in that training session. I want to replace that with about 4 pounds of water. So 16 to 24 ounces of fluid for every pound lost within a couple hours after training. So for our 180-pound person. Oh gosh, quick math here. We're probably looking at well over a gallon a day for that 180-pound athlete that's lost a lot of fluid. But for someone who's maybe only losing a pound, it might look a little bit less. Or someone that's lighter, it may look less.
All right, you just went into my book as an absolute genius. I watched this Saturday Night Live skit with Nate Bargatze, I think is his name.
Yeah.
And it was like a little skit. He was Thomas Jefferson around a campfire talking about his vision for the U.S. and how we are going to have a unique metric system. And he says, we'll measure things in feet, in inches. There'll be 12 inches to a foot. And then the person's like, and there'll be 12 foot to a yard. And he's like, no, no, that's not how it works. And he's like, we'll measure things in liters and ounces. And I was just laughing because I get so confused. And you said, you have to replace 4 pounds of fluid. And I'm like, I have no idea how many liters are in an ounce or ounces in a liter and how to do. And yeah. You made it seem like that was amazing how you did that.
I do this a lot, as you can tell. Yeah, appreciate it.
I know this is not funny at all, but go check out this Nate Bargatze skit on Saturday.
I'm going to.
It is so fun.
I'm going to.
Okay, back to nutrition.
Yes.
This was so helpful. I love how you have the big principles, the big rocks that people can anchor to and then make their own unique decisions. But then you also did a great job of giving us some specifics. Mm-hmm. Anything else that you would like to be able to share with our listeners about either sports nutrition or specifically around pregame nutrition?
Yeah, I would say supplements is usually something that jumps out a lot. People have a lot of questions around supplements. And again, I'm very much like it's individual basis really for general supplement recommendations. But there's a few things that like most athletes can probably benefit from. Creatine monohydrate, I can't sing enough praises about for even a high school athlete, collegiate athlete, even moms and dads listening. Like there are so many benefits from performance, for lean muscle growth and maintenance, and also like cognition. Creatine has been shown to be protective against like neurodegenerative disorders, things like Alzheimer's and whatnot. So creatine's a great one. People have questions usually around, do I need to load it? You can load it, which is means like taking 20 grams of creatine, usually for like 5 days. And that's to super saturate our stores. Or you can do like a maintenance dose of 5 grams of creatine for 30 days and get about the same response too. So that's one. I always recommend things are third-party tested. There's an app called NSF for Sport and one called Inform Sport. And they're both companies that third-party test supplements. And so download those and then you can search on each of those apps for a product that's appropriately tested for an athlete. So we're not worried about banned substances. Most athletes aren't eating enough like fish, like salmon. And so a good like omega-3 fish oil is helpful for an athlete too, for recovery, for healing, reducing inflammation, that sort of thing. A protein powder can be helpful too. I say, you know, don't rely on protein powders, but it can be helpful to fill in the gaps. Most athletes do have a hard time consistently meeting their protein intake. So having something like a protein powder that you can throw into a smoothie or even like stir into a Greek yogurt, something to increase your protein intake can also be helpful. Plant-based protein, if you're going to do a plant-based as opposed to like a whey protein powder, I'd go for like a pea or a soy-based protein.
Such great advice. Thank you so much for all your time. Where can listeners find out more about you?
So mostly I'm on Instagram, also on TikTok, Jessica the Sports RD. I put out a lot of like fun educational videos, hopefully educational and hopefully fun. And then website, jessicathesportsrd.com.
Now that's a wrap on episode 122. And I hope you join me in the upcoming episodes where I get to interview some of the best basketball strength coaches from around the world. I was invited to contribute to a book called There's More Than One Way to Skin a Cat, where 5 European and 5 U.S. performance coaches share their strategies on testing and training basketball players. There's chapters on mobility, agility, strength, periodization, recovery, and each coach answers the same question so you can see there's more than one way to accomplish a goal. I can't wait for the book to come out so I can broaden my perspective and learn from the guys that currently coach in the EuroLeague, Division I, and the NBA. And so, for the next 3 months, I'm going to ask one question about either increasing vertical leap, preseason testing, and reducing ankle sprains to each of the 10 coaches to show how there's more than one way to skin a cat. And to all of you who are committed, well, earn your X.